Hello everyone, welcome to This Week in Stupid for the 10th of January 2016. If you find anything you'd like to see in This Week in Stupid, tweet using hashtag TWIS or post it to rsargonofacad. Just in case anyone's wondering, I won't be covering any of the colonial migrant issues in this week's episode because I'll do a separate video on that during the week. There's quite a lot to talk about, so it would just dominate this entire episode. Since we're on the subject though, England for the Africans. GCSE pupils to be taught that the nation's earliest inhabitants were Africans who were in Britain before the English. I haven't even read this yet, but I can guarantee it's going to involve three things. The Romans, North African legions, and historians losing their shit over this. GCSE students are to be taught that some of our nation's earliest inhabitants were Africans, who arrived here long before the English. The Mail on Sunday has discovered the extraordinary rewriting of our island's history, the politically correct work of a Marxist academic. No, really, if you can believe it, a Marxist postmodernist trying to rewrite history. The only place Marxism didn't die is in the West. But will be offered to thousands of history students throughout England from September. Its creators claim the course addresses the white male-dominated view of history. Oh yeah, the white male-dominated view of British history. You know, that was made mostly by white men. I'm so sorry. Historian Sir Roy Strong, the author of The Story of Britain, said, "This stands history on its head, projecting back onto the past something that isn't true. What a surprise. So I knew that historians wouldn't be happy about this. Let's see where this all comes from." The African in Britain's quotation is the opening line of a key book on the course reading list by a Marxist historian and refers to a Roman legion of North Africans. What a fucking surprise! Stationed on Hadrian's Wall. That means that the 500 Aurelian Moors definitely inhabited Britain before the English got there. Fuck these people. They're fucking liars, they're revisionists. They are in no way up to any fucking good, I swear to God. Eminent military historian and author Anthony Beevor said, "Migration is a very valid area to study, but if it's a question of rewriting history to bolster the morale of certain sections of the population, rather than a scrupulous attitude towards facts, then it is a total distortion and it's outrageous." And he's right. I can't believe that they haven't been talking about the Scythian units that the Romans also stationed along Hadrian's Wall. I mean, then it would look less like you were pushing an agenda. But I mean, no one cares about Ukrainians or Crimeans or anyone from anywhere near the Caucasus Mountains, so there would be no point bringing them up. Professor Mark Ormrod of York University is one of the historians researching the topic, and he says, "It is an outstanding example of how a long view of history helps us to understand and to find a place for ourselves in contemporary society." What are you fucking talking about? How exactly does saying the Romans brought a North African regiment of men to guard Hadrian's Wall in any way help us to understand and find a place for ourselves in contemporary society? There is no evidence that they stayed, so what exactly does this have to do with anything? And then he says, "Our research project shows how, for example, in the late Middle Ages, no one was more than 10 miles from an immigrant. Wow, well done on making them sound like they're rats. But who fucking cares? No more than 10 miles from an immigrant. That's fucking far. Especially on an island when you can be no further than 70 miles from the sea at any point." But I love the use of the term immigrant, as if the Danelaw was just about immigration, as if the Norman Conquest was just about immigration. These are just immigrants. They went to border control, they got a passport, and they got it stamped, and then they came into Britain, and then they besieged York. But this is the best bit. Mark Goddard, head of history at OCR, said, "There is no political bias. The GCSE will present facts. It's not pushing any particular argument. I'm sorry that you don't understand how distorting history to make it sound like there were African natives in Britain who had migrated and settled here to form a part of the genetic and cultural fabric of the British Isles is in and of itself a demonstration of political bias, you fucking idiot." Wow, that actually really pissed me off. I actually am genuinely annoyed about that. So I need something that is going to it's going to lighten the mood somewhat. Something to relax me. I mean, I don't know. Maybe this will be funny. transgender surgery addict spends £52,000 on 4 boob jobs, 2 rounds of lipo and 150 face fillers to have, quote, the perfect female body, and says her wife is standing by her. Well, why wouldn't she? If she's got the perfect female body, I mean, you know, if my wife is alone, I'm going to turn myself into a man and I've got the perfect male body. But, well, how close do you ever get to perfection, really? I mean, sure, it's not the kind of perfection you wanted, but perfection is perfection. I mean, you can't just turn something up just because it's not exactly what you asked for, right? Jesus fucking Christ! What? Fucking... Oh, okay. Okay, I mean, like... I was really taken aback by the face, and nobody said anything about having the perfect female face, because that would have been a failure. And I guess for a 52-year-old, that's quite a nice rack. Oh, I love body shaving, it's so fun. Seriously, though, I know I'm being petty and mean, but I don't care. If you're going to do this to yourself, honestly, what do you expect, really? You know? If you can believe it, she said that, I'm not happy with my perfect body, because it's not perfect. Perfection is something else. I have no idea what you're talking about. But, you know, I'm just being a total asshole, because, you know, who am I to say that someone, if they feel like they're trapped in the wrong body, shouldn't be able to transition into the next body? It's nothing to do with me, and the guy's wife was actually okay with it, and now they live like sisters. So really, I should stop picking on them. They haven't done anything to deserve it, other than look like a freak show, and I'm sure that doesn't make life any easier in the small Italian town in which they live. What I should do is find someone who deserves it. Realizing you're a paedophile can make you want to kill yourself. Huh. This must be from a progressive publication. Oh, it's Vice magazine. Right, that explains everything. So, sexually abusing kids is about the worst thing that you can be accused of in our society. I just want to stop there and really examine this opening sentence, because this opening sentence is almost everything about the progressive mind in a microcosm. The fact that sexually abusing kids is the worst thing you can be accused of because sexually abusing kids is about the worst thing you can do is irrelevant to our author. And the author really doesn't care that everyone knows this as well, which is why accusations of sexually abusing kids are usually not taken lightly. Now you're probably thinking, yeah, but it's just an accusation, and that's true. It is just an accusation. But let's be honest with ourselves, there's probably quite a strong correlation between people who sexually molest children with the causation of people who are sexually attracted to children. And so it's rather understandable that people would view paedophilia in a very negative light. And so I really can understand the idea of saying that, look, when the author or the subject of this article found out that they were a paedophile, they treated it as if they'd been cursed and they wanted to kill themselves. But I'm sorry, I'm not going to treat grown adults who want to have sex with children as victims of their desire to have sex with children. That line of thinking exonerates anyone from anything. Oh, well, I mean, I didn't want to be a violent psychopath, but I just happened to be so full of testosterone and the desire to hit and hurt other people, I just couldn't help it. Oh, well, you know what? He's right. We should give him sympathy. He didn't want to hurt people. He just couldn't help it because of his desire to hurt people. And I know I'm going on a lot about this, and I'm not actually trying to vilify paedophiles, because if it is something that they genuinely can't change, then, again, what can they do? It's not their fault, and they don't deserve to be demonised. And as they go on to point out, we don't punish people because of the things that they think, we punish them because of the things that they do. The author and I both live in a Western liberal democracy, and we don't punish people for enjoying their own freedom of thought, even if we find those thoughts utterly vile. But the thing is, that isn't the progressive position on the issue. That's taking advantage of the liberal institution's position on the issue. These people run tumblers called Getting Racists Fired. These are some of the most proud moments in a social justice warrior's online social media career, is if they manage to get a sexist or a racist fired from their job. Have these people committed any crimes? No. They've just shared opinions that the SJWs don't agree with. So this is why I can't understand why they form the Social Justice Paedophile Defence Force whenever they can, at every given fucking opportunity. And it seems to be a mixture of a few things, like it says in the second half of the sentence here, and are forced to come to terms with an identity that most people regard as monstrous. I wonder if it's anything to do with happy paedophiles being a minority of paedophiles, or that 76% of paedophiles have suffered from major depression in their life. I mean, do these things all sort of coalesce in the progressive SJW mind to create the image of someone who is being oppressed? They even paint the paedophile who wrote in Salon, Todd Nickerson, as the victim for getting fired from his job, despite the fact that progressives do that all the time. They try to get people fired all the time on the basis of opinions and thoughts that they don't like. See, my problem with this whole article isn't that they're trying to help people who probably actually do need supervision and help. My problem is that what they're trying to do is excuse them of any agency of their own. So pushing paedophiles further into the shadows by persecuting them at every turn may well increase the possibility that they will offend, which might be true, but listen to this. Distancing paedophiles from society has also made some adopt extreme stances. Excuse me, dear author, you don't know why they've adopted these extreme stances. Tom O'Carroll, a British paedophile activist who in the 1980s chaired a notorious pressure group called the Paedophile Information Exchange, which advocated for abolishing consent laws completely. I don't think he adopted that stance because he was marginalised. I think he adopted that stance because he really wanted to have sex with children. But listen to this. Brett, while self-identifying as a paedophile, has nothing but disdain and contempt for people like O'Carroll who are known within the paedophile community as pro-contactors. It's partly because of that crowd that so many are unwilling to listen to me and paedophiles like me. They want it to be an identity. They want it to have a community, and they want to be community leaders. This, and I know this is going to sound crazy, I think is actually a social justice invasion of the paedophile community. Social justice is so freakishly hegemonic, so obsessed with power, that there is no community on earth, no matter how fringe, how repulsive, that social justice has got to try and infiltrate and take over. And the thing is, I've got absolutely no idea whether the paedophile community is capable of resisting an incursion of social justice. I've absolutely no idea. But SJWs have taken over communities with higher and frankly better moral standards than any paedophile community could ever hope to achieve. So I honestly don't think it will be too long before we see social justice paedophiles. And I honestly think that that Virtuous Paedophiles website that they keep talking about is going to be like the Tumblr of them. And so literally like places like this groundbreaking high school for LGBT students is going to have to add P on the end, because they're going to become part of intersectional feminism and social justice. But anyway, I could be wrong, and either way, why am I instantly reminded of madrasas or Catholic schools with the idea of an LGBT school? So Pride School Atlanta is a K-12 institution designed to be an alternative for LGBT students, though the school is open to any student who believes they're not getting the support they need for being different. Oh yeah, segregating yourselves from the normies is definitely going to be a way of getting your issues universally accepted. And Jesus Christ, imagine what the Tumblr blogs from kids who go to this school are going to look like. As if they don't hate white straight people enough already. And the thing is, I don't want to be really unfair and say that all of this is just social justice being stupid and useless. Because it's actually not, right? There are actually good motives underlying all of this, which is the thing that's most difficult to try and get past, I think, when you're dealing with people who are very much into social justice. Because it's not that these are bad motives. Like, there's a number of kids from the South who are migrating to places like New York and other cities because they feel it's more tolerant for them. They should be able to stay in their homes, their communities, and I think having a school like this in Atlanta, it means it's much more regionally connected. That's perfectly laudable. But do I think that the answer is what is effectively going to become a segregated school for LGBT people? No. All segregation has ever done is foster distrust and resentment of the other group. You don't get equal rights and equal treatment by cloistering yourselves away and demanding to be treated differently. I really don't know what's going on with Vice magazine this week, but they seem to have gone right off the deep end. A grown woman goes undercover at a frat party. So our author is meeting up with a 19-year-old sophomore at the University of Southern California to try and gatecrash a frat party, hang out and see what happens, presumably looking for rape culture or something. And before they get there, at 6 p.m, the sophomore texts her to say that she no longer feels safe or comfortable with our plan. Cindy says the frats are chartering buses to pick women up from houses, then they are driving them to a secret location. How can we leave if we don't know where we are? I don't even like to drink and I don't feel safe. So she tells Cindy that she has pepper spray and a stun gun, and we can take a taxi home the second we feel threatened. But it's a hard no from Cindy because she's been to university and they have talked up campus rape culture to the point where she thinks she's going to fucking visit ISIS. So she spends ages fantasizing about this place until she gets there and discovers it's actually really fucking mundane. The brothers largely resemble an army of zygotes outfitted in Express for Men slacks. While there are a few powerfully built guys with strong jawlines, there's the wet dream coming out. Most of the brothers are like changelings caught trapped in a liminal state between puberty and a nascent adulthood. Many are downright elfin. Hey, this isn't the rape culture she was promised. What's going on? In fact, it's the girls who have started to seize on the dark power of sex, with plunging necklines and iridescent eye makeup, clinging dresses just half an inch longer than that of a streetwalker. The girls appear more adult, possessed, and some even achieve glamour. It's almost like the author's discovering for the first time that women have power in society that men will never have. A power over men, incidentally, that they're exploiting to their fullest potential. And so towards the end of the night, it sounds like she's just standing around bored. I'm not sure what I'm waiting around for. A racist chant to erupt? Or an act of dubious sexual consent? Some girl with rubbery legs upchucking while the brothers wait for her to collapse into their arms? A spontaneous orgy? I'm not sure what it would prove. Not fucking much, probably. But at the end of the day, nothing like that is happening. You and the girl who chickened out of going because she was too afraid of being raped have got a wildly distorted view of what just life is like. You have spent too long in your feminist echo chambers, and you've persuaded yourselves that everywhere is terrible, and when you go out and find that it's not, you're like, oh, this is weird and boring. I'd better write an article for Vice magazine about how it's not as bad as I thought it was going to be. It's actually far more mundane. And I'll finish this week with some really pointless, boring nonsense that means nothing at all. That's right, things that have happened on Twitter. Apparently, women are destroying men on Twitter with hashtag WasteHisTime2016. Why not just hashtag WasteHisTime? But that mention is really all the time I'm going to waste on this. Because more interesting retardation was happening on Twitter, such as hashtag ResistCapitalism, which a bunch of absolute geniuses got trending on Twitter. Apparently, one should resist capitalism, because 100,000 civilians died during the Korean War as a result of Allied action, which, that's a bizarre way of framing any kind of argument against an economic system. Because if we're to look at, like, the alternatives, they have capitalism beaten hands down by a fucking mile. And most of the people who use this hashtag, myself not included, of course, are the sort of pretentious twats who you see sitting in Starbucks and being annoying on the internet using an Apple product. You know, the sort of people who are so mired in the corporatist system that we're in, that they wouldn't know what to do if they were in a different one, and they wouldn't understand exactly how much they stand to lose. And while I agree that this kind of hashtag slacktivism is pointless, I think it would be foolish to think that Twitter doesn't have any power. The first example I would give is Liberal candidate steps down after apologising for offensive tweets posted as a teenager. And this is literally as stupid as it sounds. A woman who posted offensive tweets as a teenager several years ago has decided to step down as the Liberal candidate in the Calgary Nose Hill riding in Alberta. Whatever her name is, had apologised for her tweets and blamed youthful ignorance for her social media faux pas. And you would think that that would be enough. You'd think that, okay, yeah, everyone was a stupid kid, everyone said stupid things as a stupid kid, so why would we make a big deal out of something she said when she was a child? No idea. But apparently that's her career done. She can't now be the Liberal candidate. But I mean, surely you would think, I mean, this is Canada, so you'd think, say, I don't know, Justin Trudeau would go, hey, wait, it's 2016. She said it in the past when she was a child, she's apologised, let's just let it go. But no, that's what they would do in a sane universe. Instead, he said she did the right thing by taking responsibility for her actions as a teenager. The actions being tweeting something offensive. I spoke with Alla last night, who recognizes her mistake, who apologizes for that mistake, and who assumes personal responsibility and takes on the consequences that come with what she did. That's ridiculous. She tweeted some things that people were offended by because she was an edgy teenager. Now she's not. She's apologized. She's been like, you know what? I was being childish. I'm really sorry. Can we all move on? And for some reason, you can't move on. You're actually supporting her self-flagellating to the point where she's like, you know what? I can't ever run for a liberal. I can't do it. I said something nasty when I was a kid. I just can't do this. I could never make amends. It's fucking absurd. And don't get me wrong, her tweets were quite full on, but who gives a fuck? They were tweets. She made them as a kid. She's apologized and she's amended her ways. I don't see why this has to be a bigger issue. But like I said, people are taking things that happen on Twitter seriously, and they really probably shouldn't. Thanks, BuzzFeed, for letting everyone know that Twitter has unverified writer amid speech wars. The company won't explain the removal of Milo Yiannopoulos' verification badge, a campaign against harassment and allegations of speech policing. Well, this sounds important. See, while Milo seems to be handling this with, well, the usual mirth that he approaches most things with on Twitter, I mean, they didn't ban him, so it's weird that the Huffington Post would take this as such a big win. Thank you, Twitter. By unverifying Milo Yiannopoulos, you're standing up for women online. Really? Are you sure? I mean, do you know that that's why they did it? Or is it that Milo tweeted something that broke Twitter's rules? I mean, he's quite a provocateur in a lot of ways. I mean, this was bound to happen sooner or later, really, if you just look at some of the things he tweets. We know how pro-social justice Twitter is, so this doesn't come as a surprise to me at all. But what I found really surprising is how excited the progressive press is about this. It's fucking silly. You're making him famous by making a big deal out of him being unverified. That's what you're doing. I mean, look at this. Right-wing outlets make a big deal about their own being victimized by liberals. If Twitter hadn't unverified Milo, and if the feminists hadn't made such a big fucking deal about it, do you think there would have been this article written, sucking Milo's dick? There would have been no reason for them to write this. Thousands of people wouldn't have changed their profile pictures and names to Milo Yiannopoulos' profile picture and name, and then tweeted using the hashtag Je suis Milo, which ended up trending worldwide, you fucking idiots. Instead of doing Milo any harm, you have made him more famous, and you have made his fanbase more dedicated to him. You would have had more effect if you had done nothing.